And I went 3-3, which was a blast. And
this guy is so chipper. It's like 3-3. But normally somebody else, like, well, it didn't go very well, 3-3. He's like, I went 3-3. It was a blast.
Well, I got to hang out with my friends. Just because I want to, it don't mean I will. And just because I'm angry, it don't mean I'd kill. And just because she looks good, it don't mean I'd hit it. And just because I'm horny, it don't mean I'm with it. Just because I make records, don't mean that I'm gassing. Just because I'm rapping, don't mean I chase ass. Just because I'm wilding, don't mean I can't stop. I got discipline, baby, and I use it a lot. People, it's something that you should be. Welcome to Mental Discipline. I'm gonna like mental stutter on that every time.
Really?
Chrono stutter.
Yeah.
Oh my god. This is a bad card.
I guess.
Welcome to Mental Discipline 9. My name is Matt Mendoza.
James Mellish.
Dustin Sendejas.
Alright. Oh man. What a weekend.
I started some personal discipline today, actually.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I decided... Well, there were I want to, like, there are a few things I want to try and make sure and do every day. Like, exercise, read... and practice.
Get a job and shave are not on the list.
No, things. No, they're things to avoid. In fact, if I had to be traditionally employed, I don't know if I'd have time for the other things. But I knew that, like, you know, because I'm kind of a night owl, if left to my own devices. But I'm like, man, I always end up just chilling late at night. I'm more productive during the day. If I want to do all these things, I need to make sure and, like, wake up earlier. So that's what it started today, and I want to commit, like, you know, an hour-ish to each one of those things, 45 minutes to an hour. And so step one was actually start, which I did today. So we'll see
Okay. How
long I can keep all of these.
What time did you wake up today?
8:30.
Wow. I was really hoping it was going to be like 10:30 a.m.
Little baby steps, baby steps.
Yeah, yeah.
3 a.m.
Awaken at 8:30, I put myself at, okay, be out of bed and start moving around and start doing the things by 9.
By 9:45?
No, by 9. Because, you know, before you know it, it's mid-afternoon and then I got to go be about other things. And so, you know, that's my time. If I could be productive at like midnight through 4 a.m., then I could keep my normal schedule. But I'm not going to be productive during that time.
Hmm. I'm normally very... It's normally, like, right when I have to go to bed is when... With, like, on a normal schedule is when I usually am like, oh, man, I just feel a stroke of genius coming on.
Really? Really?
Maybe I can mill my opponent out.
Why did you hand me a blank piece of paper?
For your gum.
You know what?
Gum
I mean,
out.
But I like the minty flavor in my mouth.
Man.
I'm going to take that quote out of context.
You can if you want it. I still like the minty flavor in my mouth. Well,
you of all people should know if you're recording audio, you don't chew gum.
Oh, now we're gonna have
a red. Unprofessional.
You're gonna have red E on iTunes. That's what you're gonna give us, the little red E. Do you want to have the little red E?
Okay.
He's just gonna cover it all up with the dolphin sound. I thought.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, from SpongeBob.
Which I did that, by the way.
No, I did. I did notice that. I laughed when I listened to it.
Yeah, you never fucking said anything about it.
I clapped when I heard it.
Good lord, man. How much personal validation do you need?
A lot.
Okay. Well, I'll remember that from now on.
I was in the bathtub when I heard it, and I came up out of the water. This is where, you know, the podcast when there's no visual. It kind of is lackluster.
Came up out of the water. So you were in
the
bathtub,
clap, you know, like,
fully submerged.
Oh, yes.
All right, I'm going to cut all of that out.
That's fine.
I hate the categories.
You.
All right, let's talk about some magic.
You should take that quote out of context.
James, what did you do?
Last Sunday, I played in a standard IQ, and I went 3-3, which was a blast. Okay. And
this guy is so chipper. It's like 3-3. But normally, somebody else, like, well, it didn't go very well, 3-3. He's like, I went 3-3. It was a blast.
Well, I got to hang out with my friends. And I also played... The deck I'm playing, because I'm a little copycat, is Mono Black Aggro, just like my big brother Dustin.
Just like.
And I played basically the same list that he plays, except for... What did I change when I played in the IQ? Obviously nothing notable, because I don't even remember. It was like two cards, probably.
And then I thought to myself after playing in the event, I said, what is the best card in this deck? Mogus' Marauder, duh. Because basically in the current standard, that card says all your creatures become unblockable and have haste. Because the only creature that's black that's played consistently in standard is Siege Rhino. I mean, Rakshasa, Death Dealer, a little pinch here and there.
Yeah.
And
that's true, though. So often the Marauder, it just ends the game right away. It cuts off any like thinking that you were doing previously about, well, I can attack with these guys, and maybe you'll trade here, maybe. You know, you're thinking about it during your opponent's turn, and then when you draw, it oftentimes like, here, I got the Marauder. So.
Whoops.
Yep.
And so I said, how can I play 8 Mogus' Marauders without cheating my opponents? So the answer was Splash Blue for Quickling.
Have you tried this yet online or anything?
I have tried it.
Because I was very intrigued by this idea.
Because I thought it, of course it was my own idea, so I thought it was pretty genius. But but it has amazing synergy with everything in the deck. You bestow creatures, you get to get them back, and all of a sudden you can like bestow them on your Quickling, and you have this unblockable like 4/3.
Right, because I've been trying online a White Splash for Sorin and just like Banishing Light out of the sideboard.
How's that been going?
It's good. I was playing a bunch of, you know, tournament practice the other night. So it was actually my first time ever playing the new MTGO client. I haven't been playing it. So I didn't want to spend any tickets, you know, while I was like, all right, I might clunk things up a little bit. So I just played a bunch of tournament practice. But I was like 5-1, I think, in matches. And then I wanted to run one more before I like went to bed and I lost that one. But so it was 5-2. So it was all right. And it wasn't a bunch of wacky decks like it often is in tournament practice, you know? Like it was just the decks, pretty much, like a bunch of Mardu.
Mardu Walkers,
mid range. Just a bunch of like Butcher of the Horde, Rabble Master decks, you know, that kind of thing. But Quickling has been cruising?
Well, here's the issue. Okay. Is the deck kind of poops on me every time I play it. Like, as in, it's nothing to do with the way... And, you know, I'm an honest player when it comes to, like, my feedback towards my play or whatever. When I played in that IQ on Sunday, I mulliganed at least once in every single match. 3 separate times throughout the day, I mulliganed to 5. So there's not a whole lot you can do your deck just like doesn't draw well for you.
Well, yeah, and you're kind of accepting that risk when you play. Were you playing 20 lands?
21.
Okay, I did. I actually made a couple slight changes. I think over the weekend, on Anthony Easton's recommendation, put 2 copies of Sign and Blood in the deck. I can't remember what I shaved for it. I think I moved 1 Hero's Downfall to sideboard. Honestly, don't remember what the other card was, but. Playing 2 copies of Sign and Blood and went down to 20 lands. I was really trying to lower my chances of Mana Flood and wanted to give myself something to like mitigate it if it did happen. Because those were the games I just like always lost. But that's you take that risk, you know. That's when you play a land light deck that you're gonna mulligan maybe a little more than you otherwise would, but you just hope that since your plan is to kill fast, they're like, well, if I get the right 6 or the right 5, you know, I can still do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you take out for Quickling?
I sighted Hero's Downfall, moved that to the side, moved Empty the Pits to the side, moved...
Wait, Empty the Pits?
Yeah, that's a one of that Dustin added.
Oh, was that... That must have been what I removed for Sign and Blood then, because I moved that to the board.
Okay.
It's a nice like late game bullet. In fact, I think I remember that now. I remember when I was texting you about the deck saying that like it was there just sort of for the random like late game trump, but it definitely like could be something else. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's ballsy.
I mean every once in a while you get in that situation where it just happens to be turn 7, you know, and you wish the game weren't still going on. And it's like, oh, here we go.
You know what you can play? Because you're playing blue? Treasure Cruise.
Oh man, here we go.
Because, Treasure Cruise.
I don't know, the 2/2s might be more relevant in an aggro deck than drawing 3 cards and then...
Have you seen Treasure Cruise?
Sign and Blood.
It says draw 3 cards.
I know, but you also have to have... I mean, that's the other thing, is the deck doesn't actually get that many cards in the graveyard.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, unless you're, like, losing.
Yeah. Okay. And if you're losing that badly, you'd probably rather just have permanents than some cards that could be lands. And so I can't remember what the other two cards that I took out were. I'd have to, like, look over my whole list again.
So when it, were you... So the, this Quakeling version, have you been playing it online? Did you play it...
I've only
Wednesday
gotten to
at Wizard's
play
Wagon. Did you both?
I played it. Yeah, I played it Wednesday. Wednesday at a Wizard's Wagon, and I went 1-2. But again, it was just like, seriously, I just don't understand whether maybe I just need to practice my shuffling or something like that. But yeah, I just mulliganed every single match I played in, and it wasn't like.
Let me ask you this: did you mulligan any one landers that maybe in retrospect could have been keeps? Because I keep a decent number of one-landers in the deck, depending on whether I'm on the player's draw and what the hand looks like.
I tried that approach where I was like, maybe I'll try keeping a couple of one-landers. Maybe that's why I'm mulliganing too much. And I just lost horribly those games.
Oh, that can happen. That can happen. I'm not saying, you know, there's no guarantee that, like,
yeah,
the land is in the top couple cards of the deck. But if I get a one-land hand, and I have usually at least, like, 2 1-drops, as long as one's not, I don't know, Boon of Erebus or something. Like a couple proactive one drops, you know, like a dude and a Thoughtseize, or 2 creatures or whatever, at least. I mean, very likely I might have 3 or 4 ones.
Oh, that's
in the deck. There's so
that
many, but I'll, you know, I'll keep a hand like that. And then if I only end up with 2 lands over the course of, say, 5 turns, oftentimes that's fine if I just have a bunch of ones and like Thoughtseize and stuff, maybe a Painsea or whatever.
Yeah, those were the other cards I took out, was Boon of Erebos, just because.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
just sense. Because Quickling can effectively, it can't kill the other creature, but it can still effectively regenerate.
Yeah,
the creature.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I mean, to comment on the effectiveness of it, despite the fact that, like, overall I didn't perform well, it did literally everything I wanted it to. You know, I saved creatures from removal, I got repeated ETB effects, I got to bounce back pursuit creatures and then play them.
I actually quite like that idea. I'm interested to try it myself. So in terms of
the
database,
you can play Disdainful Stroke in the sideboard, which is pretty amazing in an aggro deck.
That's the one that counters...
4 and up.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so you, like, against, you know, like, Abzan, like, you just rock them at the beginning of the game when they're trying to, like, get their mana base together, and then they're like, ah, oh, yes, Siege Rhyne, nope!
Siege Rhyne, nope.
Yeah.
I think we have an episode title.
I was like, I'm saying.
Well, that's pretty good. What I was about to ask, in terms of mana base, so I assume you're playing the Polluted Deltas.
Yeah, I...
What's the other? Mana Confluence or...
No, I...
Scryland? I don't know.
I've actually had it be totally fine to me by... I just took out 7 of the Swamps, and I put in 4 Polluteds and 3 Islands.
4 Polluted Deltas, 3 Islands. Come
yeah.
closer, James.
Because,
okay.
I mean, drawing more than one island sucks. So
oh,
that's why
oh, yeah,
I didn't
yeah, yeah.
bring in any more than 3.
I would be hesitant to, yeah, to play more than, like, 2 islands in the deck or something. But, so yeah. 4 Polluted Deltas, 3 Islands, like, I can see that.
Okay.
Do you not have access to any Mana Confluence, or did you just decide against that?
I have them, but, I mean, the deck hurts itself a lot.
It does. It is a dog in other aggro matchups, I will say that. Those are tough. They require,
like a
really good draw or more experience. But I've been so consistent, at least locally, against, like, mid-range and control decks, that I like playing it, but, man, every once in a while when you run up against, like, red aggro, or, like a blue-white heroic or something, it is really hard. It's, you just, yeah.
Because you can't
block. You gotta get exactly what you need to win those, basically.
Yeah.
There's really no, like, mediocre draw that can win those.
I'm sure any opponent that goes mountain and then taps it, you're just like, oh,
yeah,
like, no.
Oh, dang it, okay. Hopefully you're bad or get unlucky.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where you're at.
It's yeah.
gonna be rough.
I can't believe I'd never thought of this before, but when I was in the final round of that IQ, I played against a guy who was on Sly. Like, we were in the last round and we already knew we couldn't make top 8, so we were just talking about our decks or whatever. And we, like, did the dice roll, and he won. And he was like, I'll be on the play. And I was like, and I'll be on the prey. And I was like, wow, as an English major, I can't believe I never thought of that. I've said, like, on the prey, like in an like Asian accent before or whatever.
Wow, I was just gonna say only when you were like being racist toward Asians, but then you actually said that. I was like, oh, geez, that's well. Whatever. Nobody cares. So speaking of controversies, sorry, I don't know if we want to divert right away, but
yeah, sure.
Did you see
Alex Bertoncini banned for 3 years again?
I don't know how controversial that is. I mean, people cheat and then they get banned. That's pretty, you know.
Was that what you were going to say?
That's pretty cut and dry. No. Did you happen to see Caleb Durward's long-winded apology?
No.
So he had an extremely verbose apology on Facebook today because apparently at the TCG player Max Point event, which, by the way, there were so many events running concurrently this weekend. There was Eternal Champs stream in Philly. There was, of course, the Star City Open. There was the TCG Player Max Point Series. And there was a GP.
In Stockholm.
Yeah, in Stockholm. All those going on concurrently, which is awesome for the game, right? There's just like magic being streamed worldwide. It's amazing. But apparently, the top four of the event decided to split. And Durward's opponent, this is just from like his Facebook status, sort of offered him just kind of for some fun wacky play. He's like, "Hey, why don't we gentleman's mulligan to two, and just to do something goofball, you know? Because you know you can agree to you could agree to go back to seven after a mulligan by drawing,
drawing
the game.
It's actually,
you can also
I want to expand on that.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
I just want the listeners to know as a judge, how that actually works is basically like, and a lot of people don't know this. They'll call it a friendly. They'll be like I for one, if I'm playing a sanctioned tournament, whether it's regular REL or competitive or whatever, I never take friendlies.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Even if my opponent asks, it's like, take a friendly? No, thanks. Like, I want to play actually as if for realsies. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you can do, however, is you can choose to draw the game that you're in and then go move on to the next one. And you can actually do that as many times as you want. Because the match is not officially over until one player has won two of the games.
Right.
So, you can have, for example, you would have, I win game one. Game two comes up in a draw. I still haven't won the match. Game three comes up in a draw because somehow I kill, we kill each other simultaneously, both games two and three. Nobody has won the match.
Can that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, I mean, you could turn in a results slip that said, 2-1 and, 8 in the draw. Yes. In the draw. If you wanted to. If everybody kept needing to mulligan and you guys just wanted to do that for whatever.
I know that can happen. I was just trying to think of ways that you could simultaneously lose, and I was like, oh, it has to be from the same source, I guess.
I didn't bring this up last week. That happened to me at States. We got a simultaneous deflecting palm. I was swinging in for the kill, and he deflecting palmed one of my guys, and we were both at really low life total.
But wouldn't the deflecting palm resolve killing you before you kill him?
No, because it's damage that would be dealt. Because that wasn't the only creature that I was attacking with.
Oh.
Yeah, we had to call a judge. We both died. Anyway.
So just FYI, that's how that works.
Right.
If you don't want to take a friendly, you can choose to draw and go move on to the next game where you both draw new sevens and everything like that.
Right. And in the case of the sort of, wacky, let's mulligan really low, that's I kind of just more on the honor system, hey, you want to do this? Yeah. And then because you can choose to mulligan any hand, whatever. It's not like, hey, you're breaking the rules if you don't keep that hand or something like that, So they both just decided between each other, let's just mulligan down to two.
I'm sorry to interrupt again.
No, you're fine.
I have a quick question. But so if you're judging that match, do they have to go through the motions of mulliganing every hand?
No. You can shortcut.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, you never know. No, some people are.
Question, but
yeah.
No,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can shortcut.
So you might think, well, what's the controversy here? What's wrong with this? I guess the coverage team, and Matt, you would have intimate knowledge of this sort of thing. The coverage team was just really confused because the game started and they both had two cards, you know, in their opening hand. So they were like, what's going on? And apparently, you know, in the middle of the match, Rashad kind of asked them or whatever, like, maybe after the first game or maybe before it started, you know, I'd have to reread the Facebook status to see. Uh-huh. Like, hey, can you guys, like, kind of, can you not do this? Like, we want kind of like a real match for the camera and all of that. And so basically, I guess Caleb was just apologizing to all the people he inconvenienced in that regard. And of course, a debate ensued on the comment thread of like, oh, I thought it was cool. You know, there's no need to apologize. Yeah, yeah. Well, he was being inconsiderate. Well, it's not a legitimate game. Or it doesn't matter if it's a legitimate game. It's more about being inconsiderate. You know, and so all the different opinions were following from that. And I just didn't know if you guys had seen that or heard
it's
about that.
It's inconsiderate to show Magic players that you can have fun.
that is one opinion. You know, I think if I were watching it, I wouldn't really care one way or the other. I do think it showed a lot of character on Caleb's part. That's something that ultimately is nothing more than like, maybe at worst being a little inconsiderate that he would give such a lengthy apology for something like that, I think speaks highly of him, you know?
Yeah, well, that it speaks of like a knowledge of, there are people that did not want to see that. There were people that were disappointed that they did not get to see Caleb Durward play a straight game of Magic.
Yeah.
My opinion is that there are enough straight games of Magic played on camera.
Exactly.
All the time.
That's my thought.
Like, to have the one fun anomaly where it's like semifinals of a pro tour, game five is determined by two people who were like, let's go to zero. Let's
like,
do
imagine
this.
If you saw like John Finkel and Yuya Watanabe do that. That match would be remembered forever, and you'd be like, "Yeah, I got to see that live." Yeah.
Right, right. And a lot of people were expressing that opinion on the comment thread, just like, "I really liked it. It was crazy." Yeah. It was, you know, which I can totally get. I think what he
like was like a regular thing that occurred. Absolutely not. Like, I feel like the novelty would definitely wear off, and it would be like, "All right, like I'm going to move on to," especially with like four different events streaming. Or three different event streams.
Right.
Just, like, go on to the next one. But, I think, like, it's fine.
Yeah, it wouldn't have bothered me. I think what he, at least what he seemed to feel the worst about was that apparently, previously, TCG player didn't allow prize splits. And since they did, and all they really ask of everyone is to, like, play out all the top eight matches, that he thought, like, well, that's a little bit backhanded to, like, you know, they do this for us and allow us to prize split. We should at least give them, like, the games that they want.
Oh, yeah,
sort of thing.
That's, that's one thing that is pretty commonplace is that it is required that you play out the top eight.
Like, yeah.
Regardless of the prize split situation, you play it out.
Mm-hmm. This is the local Caleb that we went to
his house. Okay, or from St. Louis, yeah.
From Channel 5. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he's recently to St. Louis.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember where he's from originally, but...
But yeah, well, I mean, I guess since neither of you saw that on stream, and nor did I just read it on Facebook today.
Huh.
Not too much we can say about it, but that was an incident, and that's the first time I've ever heard of that sort of thing happening. And it makes me wonder also if being considerate of the stream is going to be, I don't know, a factor in however games are played.
Well, it is. I mean, I don't know. It's sort of a give and take because coverage. We've actually had this debate. I had this debate with some judges at the last tournament that I went to, and Philly 1.0 when I went, and we had some judges and we talked about like. So if the, like, how do you, like, if something needs to delay, have a delay, like, if there needs to be a coverage delay, how do you approach that? And do you, like, hold up the tournament? Do you, whatever? And I'm like, no. Ultimately, the people who are tuning in to Twitch didn't show up to the tournament. They didn't pay an entry fee. And they aren't sitting in their chairs waiting to play a game of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
They are second. Period. That's always been my approach to it. Even when I ran events and streamed and ran the store at the same time, the event always came first. I always made sure that I started the event on time and that, yes, the feature match was going to be, there's like a couple minutes
where they had to sit and wait, usually that was never an issue. They always made sure to be proactive about getting results. That way the presence of coverage did not disrupt the tournament. Because ultimately, like I said, the people who show up to play in your event, they're your customers. They're priority number one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Two things.
Sure.
First, you forgot to mention that you also would never ever forget to open the event by saying, "You can call me Matt, just don't call me late for dinner." And the second thing...
All right.
Which I loved. No one else would laugh, but I would smile. And I might have chuckled a couple times. And the second thing is that when people complain about the effects of, like, streaming or, like, media on sports, games, whatever it may be, it's just dumb when people, like, complain about hockey and football and basketball or whatever having, like, TV timeouts, you know, where they, like, stop the game just so that there can be a commercial break or whatever on TV. And people are like, "That's so dumb that they, like, commercialized everything." And I'm just like, you wouldn't be here if they didn't commercialize everything. You know, ticket costs would be higher, or the players wouldn't even be playing because they wouldn't be making the salaries they wanted.
Or you wouldn't know about that new Pizza Hut deal. That might intrigue you.
I mean, these are the people that are, like, at the event that are complaining about this more so.
I see. And people that hate pizza.
But yeah, it's just, you know, like, you wouldn't be watching the stream at all. So, like, just appreciate what media gives to you and don't, like, question it.
I mean, I've had a lot of thoughts about different things. Like, going into this weekend, I had the Tarmogoyf Dye discussion with myself. Where there are pros that hate the Tarmogoyf Dye.
Right, because that's a level you can get up on somebody.
No, what it is it's derived information. And people don't have to provide derived information for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, and what is derived information? It's information that can be extracted from the information, from the pieces. For example, say there's a 2-2, and it's been giant growth. And you ask your opponent, "How big is that creature?" And they can answer your question a bunch of different ways. They just can't lie about it. So they can say, "Oh,
they can say two explorers."
It's been giant growth.
Right, right.
Or it's been, you know, whatever. They just can't lie to you. So, like, the thing with Tarmogoyf is that because it can, you know, you can, like, bolt it and it still lives. There's a lot of information to be... there's an information advantage that you can leverage because you know how big your Tarmogoyf is, but your opponent has to derive that information.
Yeah, totally. Which is part of the game. Although not on Magic Online, I guess it's not part of the game. That's something
But my ultimately where I fell on that was that the plays that I could see most commonly involving Tarmogoyf... So, for example, like, if the Tarmogoyf is a 2-3 and you... But, like, there's no instant in the yard, it's not going to shouldn't affect the decision as to whether or not you bolt it, because you know that the Tarmogoyf is a 3-power.
Toughness.
3 toughness. So when you bolt it, it's going to change whether or not you bolt it or, like, am I even being clear about this? So, like, Tarmogoyf, you know, you can get people with, like, bolts and dismembers and stuff. If there isn't an instant in the yard, like, say there's, like, two different kinds, say there's, like, a planeswalker and an artifact in the yard, and they bolt your Tarmogoyf, your Tarmogoyf doesn't actually die. Because it's a 2-3, bolt hits the yard, it becomes a 3-4 with 3 damage on it.
Right, yeah.
I thought that's why, like, when players resolve spells, they keep the card out until it resolves, and then they put it in the graveyard.
It in the graveyard is, like, the last part of its resolution.
Resolution, correct.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
so then
is that,
wouldn't the 3 damage happen, and then it's
the whole timing.
I mean, obviously, you're the judge. Like, you know, I'm just, like, trying to work it out in, like, my head from what I know. Obviously, you are right. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just
I get that though about the derived information, because that is something you can leverage. In fact, I got somebody with a Goyf similarly several years ago at a Legacy Open. I was playing Team America. Do you remember those old, like, bug control decks? That's what they were called for some reason.
Oh.
Mm. My opponent was playing some kind of junk Knight of the Reliquary deck. Let's see, he had like two Noble Hierarchs, something like that, and a Maze of Ith. And I was trying to swing in for like close to the kill. I had, I think, a couple Goyfs and maybe a Bob or something. And I had my Pernicious Deed out. And there were no enchantments in the graveyard yet. And his Knight of the Reliquary was big enough at that time to eat one of my Goyfs. But I wanted damage to get through. I didn't want his Noble Hierarchs to block, right? So I activated Pernicious Deed for one to kill his Noble Hierarchs. Attacked with my Goyfs. He didn't realize that, oh, an enchantment's now in the graveyard. Your Goyf is bigger, so he blocked. So I just ate. You know, I beat his Knight of the Reliquary in combat. If the Tarmogoyf die would have been around, it would have changed after my Pernicious Deed went to the graveyard before yeah. my combat step. That game, actually, the entire game could have gone totally different. You know, if that were the case. So it is. I can see that. It is totally absolutely. Relevant. Yeah.
No, and I think ultimately, like, I fell on the side of both communication, making sure the game state was clear to the people at home,
mm-hmm.
and that if they're on camera,
they should know.
We're going to assume that, you know, we're not putting like 1-3s and stuff on camera.
Yeah,
we're putting XOs and XO1s and X1s on yeah. camera. People who are playing for top 8, so they should know what's going on anyway.
Right.
And I still am on the fence. Ultimately, I'm siding with using the Tarmogoyf die, we actually found a good use for the Tarmogoyf die was for Monastery Swift Spear as well.
Oh, okay.
I see that. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I wouldn't mind it at all. I mean, sure, there's the occasional corner case where you can leverage the information, but ultimately, like, whatever. It's not, yeah. you know, it's not much of a thing. Like, you're on camera. Let's make it clear for the people viewing it. I mean, streaming, I think, has done so much for Magic that
absolutely.
Let's make streams awesome. You know?
Now, where you could next level is the point in time where between the time it takes to change the Tarmogoyf die,
oh yeah,
and resolution of whatever effect you want that requires the Tarmogoyf die.
Yeah,
so you can be like, you can actually just psych out the judge or whatever that. Or, you know, you guys just don't change the die or whatever, and then have your effect, and then be like, sorry. Gotcha.
Well, that's like, I don't remember if I don't think I ever talked about a notorious tournament match that I played once. I know that I've told you about it just in life, where it was the first time I ever played Modern, and the first time I ever played Amulet of Vigor. It was at a PTQ in Kansas City. And there was a guy on Malirapod. It was game 2. I slaughtered him game 1. And it was looking like he was probably going to beat me. And I played Hive Mind. And then he was like killing me on board. So I had to play my own spell and counter it with a Pact of Negation. And so, obviously, that's like he'd never seen Amulet of Vigor, so he didn't understand what was going on. So I explained the card to him. I read Hive Mind and I read Pact of Negation, and he was still seemed confused. He goes, "Okay." And so I looked at him in the eye and I said, "If you don't pay 3 and 2 blue on your upkeep, you lose the game." And he goes, "Oh, hmm." And then he just scooped. Without realizing he had 2 Noble Hierarchs in play. and then upon, like, after he had already scooped his cards up, the Noble Hierarchs happened to be on top of that scoop pile. He looked down as he was, like, putting it aside, and he goes, "Wait." And he goes, "Did you know I had those?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Wow, so you just basically tricked me to win." And I was like, "No." And he was like, "Yeah, congratulations, you tricked me." And he like signed the match slip and like threw it at me. And I was like, "Wow. No, sir, you were the silly goose who never even looked at your board state." Like, okay, you know, it's like, what did you want me to do? Wait, Steven, you don't have to lose, my friend, at this PTQ. Like, what?
How do you get upset at someone else for your own?
I know,
that's ridiculous. I mean,
and he was like really upset.
I normally don't run into that kind of thing. I mean, there have been times at tournaments where people try and run the, like, the last second change their mind, you know, like declare something and then be like, oh, wait a minute. And I'm like, nope, sorry. They never get mad. They're always like, ah, it was my fault. You know, that's like, normally if you're playing competitively, like, okay, maybe they go for it, see if I'll give it to them. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to, like, blame me for their, at least it's never happened before. Yeah. So that's, man, hopefully Steven out there has learned a little bit of composure.
Oh, yeah.
And a little humility.
I got somebody, well, I didn't get somebody. There was a player who I was playing against. I can't remember, I think it was one of the last modern PTQs I was at. He just made a play. It was obviously wrong. He pretty much immediately realized it and was like, oh, do you mind if I take it? I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't. I have to hold you to that.
I think that was the modern PTQ that we were both at, because I think I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah.
I hate it when people even ask, too, because it's kind of like they're making you the jerk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're the one that messed up. Don't put me in the position of, like, being the mean guy because I don't. Like, you shouldn't even ask. So I kind of the way that I jokingly turn around. I guess I can't do this at competitive REL because it might be misconstrued as like some kind of collusion or whatever. But the way that I jokingly like to present it, if maybe it's regular REL or something. If somebody's like, "Can I take that back?" I'm like, "Sure, as long as you let me win, regardless of the outcome of this game."
that is wrong. You cannot do that.
Or sure, as long as you reimburse me for my tournament entry. You can take that back. I'm just gonna need my $30 back.
We'll report it to the judge
because I did pay for this tournament. So if I'm not gonna get to just like compete, you're gonna have to pay me back for that.
Yeah,
that entry.
That is definitely something you cannot do.
Right, right.
Because that is offering something in exchange, even though, for a result of a game or a match.
Even though it's actually just a joke to make a point, I know that it could be misconstrued that way. So I don't. It's just being snarky, but.
Kind of like
when I tell a beggar, I was just about to ask you the same question. When they ask me what you just give him a little snark, you know.
Yeah. Literally every time I do that, I just like kind of slap my face or whatever and go, "Well, that was silly of me, wasn't it?" And then I go, "Too late." And I just like, I don't even ask anything. I just. Like, we both know that I did something dumb. I acknowledge that I did something dumb so that they don't think I'm an idiot, and we move on.
Oh, that's actually my... I'm actually, whenever I do that, I'm more interested in defending myself and communicating that, like, I'm a player who kind of knows what they're doing, and not just, like, some like, dirtle who just is like, "Oh, I'm gonna do this thing." It's like, well, I just played that out of sequence, so...
Now, I wonder if that, though, in terms of just, like, gaining competitive edge, if that's maybe conceding to, like, one's own psychological weakness. If really, if you just maintained, like, a strong posture, there'd at least be the smallest percentage chance that your opponent would be like, "Oh, maybe there's something I'm not seeing. Maybe he meant to do that, and I'm, like, not catching whatever's on the board." Because I've done that before when there's... I remember one specifically, and, man, I was just sweating, feeling like such an idiot. But I tried to just, like, maintain composure as if, you know, I had something. Even though it was something I possibly have. I was tapped out. It was M15 limited. It was just a completely cluttered board with, like, tons of creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I had lined up all the dudes that could attack. And, like, oh, okay, I don't mind if this guy gets blocked by this one guy that can eat him. Like, I thought there was only this one creature that could eat my 2/2. And it's like, I don't mind if my 2/2 gets eaten by this guy because these guys are getting in. And, you know, amidst the 5 or 6 creatures on the board, there was a 2/3, and it just, like, I just completely ignored this 2/3 that my opponent had on the board. So he's like, "Oh, I can just block and kill this guy." I'm like, and, I have that, like, oh, man, I'm such an idiot, but then I'm just trying to hold it. I'm like, okay, blocks. And then he just did exactly that and just ate him, and I'm just trying to, like, stone face it as if there's something he's not seeing, you know. But I'm tapped out. There's nothing that could possibly happen. It did not work yet.
Well, it's funny. I was actually just playing. I was just playing against like Jasper in a test game the other day, and I did that. Except for it was where I declared no blocks when he attacked me, and there were like multiple creatures. I had a Herald Torment, and I could have killed at least one thing because there was. I just know that there are no combat tricks in his deck, and he kind of looked at me funny, and he was like, "No blocks," and I was like, "Yeah," and he's like. okay. And he just like, he was like, he rolled down my life die or whatever. And then when the game was over, he was like, so why didn't you block with Herald of Torment? And I was just like, I just goofed. I just admit, yeah, I just wasn't
thinking. That's what they call a mistake.
Yeah. Just snap, no blocks. Oh no!
Yeah, yeah. So I recommend that to any listener out there. Just give it a try and see if A, you can withstand the blow to your own pride. And see if maybe you can get someone just by stone facing it when you obviously just did something stupid, and maybe they'll think you got something up your sleeve.
Wow, that was a digression. So
that was like our meta topic, though.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm satisfied.
We talked about derived information. We talked about drawing to have a friendly mulligan.
Some controversy. We
talked about some controversy. Okay, I'm satisfied.
Speaking of what, not. I mean, we're just all chatting, right? Originally, you thought the my mention of controversy was because of the cheating.
Yeah.
Do either of you guys have any? I don't know. Any interesting perspective on that? Anything to say? Any?
I just don't even understand why he was. Why is it not a lifetime ban? Like, I just don't get it.
Well, because there's not only Bertoncini, but Trevor Humphreys that also won the... did he win the Open, I think? Yes. Yeah. But they were
in the Open. Open. I feel very strongly... Well, no, strongly. He didn't
win.
Well, yeah. Ostensibly, he won, then they... Yeah. Anyway, continue.
Okay. So we are talking about the controversy of the day.
Right.
Two players were banned for cheating. One, Bertoncini, who was previously banned for 18 months... And it was extended, I think, to 24
it was,
months.
It was 3 years, and then it's 3 years again.
Oh, okay. Obvious. It wasn't 3 years before. It was 2 years. It was 18 months, and then it was extended to 2 years. All right. You can look it up. Obviously, the times that they have... I think it's nice that they're bumping that up, because obviously there is precedent that a year and a half is not enough. To extract cheating from a personality, from a person. And it is easy. Like, it's kind of... It's weird for me to sympathize with cheaters a little bit. In that... Now, before you all get...
Robbed, no. I mean, you try and find the human perspective. I guess.
Is really easy to take that first step, which leads to that next step.
Yeah.
Just inch forward. Like, oh man, I just got this guy.
Right.
Like, that's all it takes is that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that rush from it. And then you get the next guy. And then you get the next guy.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not talking about this. I'm not talking about this from personal perspective. Because that makes me sound like a cheater. I'm not.
Sure.
I'm mentioning it because in other fields, in other worlds, the financial world, for example, the people who caused the collapse, it wasn't just like they just woke up. And we're like, yeah, I'm just going to, like, just do this thing for millions of dollars. It's...
Oh, right, right.
I can
a bend, series of unethical...
Correct. That steps. Just inch towards people. Inch towards eventual ruin, where you're caught cheating or you're thrown in jail for these financial misdeeds or whatever. It's not because you woke up one day and you were like, I'm going to do this thing. It's because your ethics were worn away. And I feel like with the 18 months, that has proved to not be long enough.
Here's why I think that, I've said this in other realms also, why I think that a lifetime ban is perfectly acceptable, if not lifetime, even something like really long, like 8-10 years, because it's not punitive, right? Even though the punishment may not seem to fit the crime, so to speak, if it were like lifetime or 10 year or 15 year, something like that, I think that person's like welfare is not as important as the honest players who can no longer feel comfortable sitting across the table.
From oh, that absolutely. Person, right? Absolutely.
So I think even though, sure, that might be lesson learned and that person might never do that again, I just, sorry. My honest players now are no longer going to feel comfortable, so you're gone forever. And that's the way it is. I would have no problem if that were the case. Because I'll be honest with you, if 3 years from now I play against, you know, Bertoncini or Humphreys, I'm not going to feel comfortable. I'm going to feel like I have to keep an extra eye open. or that like I, you know, have to talk to a judge or whatever, you know, I'm not absolutely gonna feel relaxed. And I think if I were the TO, I would be more concerned about the person who's guilty of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, and that, like, them's the bricks. I'll say this, though. Boy, did that guy have some amazing sleight of hand. Humphreys, when he was shuffling, that was incredible.
Humphreys, I definitely think that 4 years, it's either an experiment that will be a mistake,
mm-hmm.
or it's not long enough. I do agree that a lifetime ban for somebody as bold as that guy is definitely appropriate. You're on the finals of a thing that's watched by thousands of people.
Yeah.
No fear. You're just like, whatever. I'm just gonna cheat.
Yeah.
That takes some bold confidence and your skills as a cheater.
And he was a very skilled cheater.
That isn't just a guy who was like I said, who was just like, oh, this tournament, I'm gonna try cheating. It's he practiced that shit. Constantly just, it's that wearing down of ethics and that increase of skill
mm-hmm.
that needs to be. I think they're gonna try 4 years, and if it ends up biting them, I think that they're gonna take the lifetime ban status.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're saving that lifetime ban thing for more violent
and that's
occurrences.
That's just the DCI, right? I mean, I think, you know, TOs have authority also, or store owners or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, you can still be, you know, allowed to play sanctioned tournaments by the DCI or whatever. But, you know, if I were a TO somewhere, I would probably just be like, you're not welcome in my tournaments anymore.
Yeah.
Because my players aren't going to feel comfortable. Go do whatever you want wherever else, but you're not welcome here in the realm where I'm in charge. Yeah. But
it delegitimizes whole tournaments.
Yeah.
Especially if, like, the cheater won. It's like, how, like, you just ruined the tournament for, you know, for X hundred or thousand other people who played and were playing honestly.
And you, you know, at least made a period of time where whatever honest opponents these people had, you know, came, paid their $40 or whatnot, and were like, it might not be having a good time at all because the person across from them, you know, has a reputation for this or whatever. And, you know, you were talking about ethics being worn away and everything. And not to get, like, too deep into psychology or whatever, but I do think, because there was Humphrey's Facebook status, I don't know if you saw it.
It was hilarious.
It was just passed all over the internet. Like, a sort of hallmark of somebody that is just kind of dishonest, or just like not a good person, for lack of better terms, just sort of unethical, is rather than admitting wrong and committing to not doing that wrong anymore, they make excuses, like all the platitudes he was throwing out. Like, I'm human, I made a mistake. You know what I mean? All these phrases that the intent is to give the listener an impression that there was in some way nothing you could do about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm human, oops, I messed up, oops. There was nothing I could have done.
So
about
was everyone
it.
Else.
You
there
made
who
a
didn't
you
cheat.
Made a decision, an intentional decision, a choice, and you are entirely responsible for that.
I mean, I think it was a step further in his case, because he actually went off the rails and was like, "I'm not a rapist. I'm not a murderer. Why am I?" Like,
oh,
he was
God.
Comparing it to jail time. He was comparing it to, like, he basically got defensive and acted like the whole community was wronging him,
right,
which is like,
right.
And
this is what dishonest
other,
people do. This is how they behave, you know.
And I loved how he coined the term underground dojo keyboard cage fighter.
That was an important contribution to our culture, and
yes.
I do thank him for that.
Absolutely. I love the meme now that says underground and dojo and keyboard and cage and fighter. Or keyboard and cage fighter.
Yeah, that is a good one. That is a good one.
Yeah, to me, it's just like, apparently two things. Apparently, number one, I suck at looking things up on my phone, which I already knew.
Yeah.
So I couldn't figure out what the original ban length was. But
hashtag, do you even Google, bro?
Well, the problem is that, like, all that kind of information on bans is, like, in forums, and those are not easy to navigate on your phone when all the text
is
super small.
True. Yeah.
I wish I could have known the details about the investigation that was going on with Bert and Genie, though.
The second ban?
Because apparently there was an investigation that was open, and they had found enough to ban him for another 3 years, and I really want Wizards to come out with that.
Sure, yeah. So, they're thorough with that stuff, yeah.
But while I was on those forums, I did see that apparently the lifetime bans that are in effect that are until like 29.99 or whatever, or no, it's 9.99, that those are for people who like stole multiple bags or something like that, like at like a GP or some like large event. And it's like, well, I don't know what the value of those belongings were. You know, in Magic, it could have been anything from like $50 to like thousands of dollars, depending on whose bag we're talking about.
Or a couple tuna sandwiches, which I would be pissed about.
Yeah, and justifiably. And it's like, well, cheating in a Magic tournament, if you're a high-level player like Bertoncini is, that is theft, because you are winning lots of money that other people deserved to win. You know, that is theft. It's indirect theft, but it's still the same concept.
It's basically the same thing, yeah.
And it also is just, like, frustrating to me. It's like, clearly Bertoncini didn't cheat in every match he ever played in.
No.
You know?
I don't think it's possible. People are going to catch you.
So it means the guy has, like, some modicum of ability that's, like, a high level. Why would you throw... I understand. It's not like that. It's never that simple. But still, it is just frustrating that you would, like... throw it all away just to win like a couple matches here, a couple matches there.
Right, right.
But like to throw away like a career over that, you know?
Yeah, it's being a good player plus cheating that makes people so successful. I mean, I don't think just cheating is enough. You know, if either one of those guys just had no concept of how to play Magic, it would be obvious watching them on camera. So clearly, they both are good players. They know how to play. But you take that skill plus cheating, and then you get the extremely unfair advantage, of course.
Yeah. So that was that discussion. So
twas.
Yeah. So going forward, let's go back to standard.
Let's go back to just play Magic.
Car back on the road.
We all love.
What do you guys want to do in terms of changing your deck for going forward?
Right now, I'm going to stick with this recipe, and if it's not working out, I think it might just be like a fundamental way that I, in particular, play the deck or something like that, in which case I might just have to move on, take my talents to South Beach, look at another deck. So
yeah.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. I'm going to continue to try the Sorin splash on MTGO. I might try.
That seems like a really cool idea.
Also online. Yeah, I mean it shores up some weak spots, you know. In aggro mirrors,
have cool ideas.
It's in aggro mirrors, it's good to have the lifelink, and being able to plop out little evasion creatures is definitely relevant. But I do kind of like, I'm trying to sort of acquire more cards slowly, and I do kind of have my heart set on like some kind of Sidisi brew. I like that wedge a lot. I think Sidisi is just a sweet card, and I would really like to find something there.
Cool. Yep. Well, I know there was a Sidisi deck that either top 16 or top 8.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's made little ripples here and there. Oh, yeah. There hasn't been one that has just really started humming and like dominating anywhere. But there's been, you know, murmurs and little flashes of Sidisi decks here and there.
Okay. I have decided I'm going to tap mountains, as I do.
Tap the Rockies.
And I'm going to start trying to play just a little bit more competitively, just to increase my collection and stuff. I've been so busy with other stuff that...
Yeah. You're just going to play Sly 2.0?
Yeah, I'm going to just...
I can send you, you know, Caleb from Columbia?
Yeah, I have a couple people to get lists from, so...
Yeah, because he won that IQ that I was at.
Oh, really?
He went undefeated. So.
Wow.
Oh, did he? Yeah. I will have to send him an internet congratulations. I did not know that.
Cool. Well, congratulations, Caleb. It's no surprise you're a decent player, so
just decent though. Don't get a big head, Caleb.
Sure, by the way, right? That's who we're talking about. Caleb Sure.
Yeah.
And he's been on
just in case anybody deck. Doesn't know. Never met the
he's
guy.
He's been on Sly since December of last year, I think. And he plays Storm and Legacy.
Right.
Yeah.
And
maybe
you'll see him around the Midwest.
I think
all y'all out there.
Unless he and Ethan play Storm. I know that Ethan plays Ant in Legacy. They both play Storm in Modern.
The times when I've played against Kayle in Legacy, he was playing Storm.
Yeah, he plays Storm, and I think he also plays Burn, maybe. But
all right, well done.
Yeah. Also, I want to say a little shout out to Dylan Danes on two accounts, because number one, he top four'd that same IQ, and I don't know where he ended up, but he top aided the Legacy IQ at Magelings, and he also complimented us on our podcast. So thank you for that, Dylan. You're a very special human being.
I accept.
Yeah. I have also caught the Legacy and Vintage bug. So I'm basically going to be filling up my binder and just sweeping up a whole bunch of red cards. I'm going to try Burn in every format I can play it in.
Sweet.
I'm actually going to build a Modern Burn deck too. That's my goal as well. Even though I have Modern Affinity, which I like to play more, but what's my goal?
Is Vintage Burn, is this like Burn plus Black Lotus and Mox Ruby or something?
I'm cooking up a list, and that'd be so insane.
Three Lightning Bolts on turn one.
No, four. The version I play doesn't actually, because Mental Misstep is a huge part of the format.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm unsure as to how effective. I'm trying to build my bolts to kind of maneuver around it. So I'm more interested in the making turn one Pyrostatic Pillar or Eidolon of the Great Revels.
That seems good.
Just plays like that. I'm more interested in making those plays. Whether they'll be more effective than the just like 30 bolts has yet to be determined. But I feel like having the sort of permanent in play that just punishes people for playing their game, I think is more effective than the traditional burn you with my bolts and stuff. It's theory, but that from watching as much Vintage and stuff as I did this weekend, that's kind of what I get out of it, because I feel like, especially the Magical Christmas Land, like Mountain Lotus two pillar effects, like Eidolon and Pyrostatic Pillar, that seems pretty insane against like almost every deck I saw except Oath.
Yeah.
And the deck can play some, you know, can maneuver such that it can be good against just about anything, I think. Burn is a pretty popular unpowered archetype. Because not only that, I mean, you get Lotus Petal, you get Simeon Spirit Guide, which are, it's a worse piece of power, but it can get you there. So the version I'm brewing has like Lotus Petal, four Spirit Guides, Ruby Lotus, and which I'm obviously going to have to wait for. But I'm cooking.
Like wait for your acting career to come around, something like that. I saw BDM's tweet from the weekend for the no power prize or whatever.
Yes,
I guess that's kind of like a side prize that you can win.
Yeah,
it's during Vintage Champs, it's whoever the best record without any power in their deck, right?
Wins $400.
Right, which is legit, but
which is enough to buy like a small piece of power.
Right. Or a large piece of cake.
A very large piece of cake.
So I don't know if you saw this, James. I'd
probably actually buy the whole one.
Yeah, well, numerous. But as someone who was shooting for that prize, he was using as goblin tokens a pieces of power, a Lotus, a Mox.
Yeah.
You know, so, those were, and he had written on the sleeve like goblin 1/1, you know. Which
he wanted people to know that he had them. He was just choosing not to use them.
Yeah.
Well, that's like pretty cute. how you criticized me for like proxying. I can't remember what it was. I was using like really expensive proxies for when we were playing Modern one time. I was using like Thoughtseize as like a Jataxian probe or something, and you were like, "What are you doing, James?"
Well, no, I was more frustrated because I had the cards, you just didn't ask me for them.
Now I remember doing something similar.
I don't need you, Matt. I was just trying to get you to write it on the back of cards or whatever.
Yeah, so, which we did. Yeah, actually.
Together.
So quick Vintage question then. So sure. The workshop decks in Vintage, they're generally like prison plus big artifact creature beaters, right? That's kind of how they work?
Pretty much.
Do you think, having watched a decent amount of Vintage this weekend, of course, that there is a possibility for, like, I don't know, like Vintage affinity? Like little guy swarm off of Workshop? Like, is that potentially a thing?
It actually seems too slow.
Really?
Okay. I mean, off the top of my head, it just seems like a strategy that would be just a little bit behind the curve.
Okay. Like, you couldn't put enough power on the board to put enough pressure to, like, stop people from doing their broken thing or whatever?
I mean, I'm not a Vintage expert by any
means. Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly neither am I. I know almost nothing about the format.
I mean, it feels like... And it also feels like slightly underwhelming, considering that you don't have access to, like... You have access to Workshop, but you aren't really using Workshop to its fullest potential.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In that you're playing cards with affinity and stuff, and that they just... You really want just a bunch of artifacts.
Yeah.
I may actually just not... The more I talk about it, the more I just like think that I have no idea what I'm talking about, even. So it just feels like
also possible.
Workshop, despite powering out the artifact strategies.
You mean the bigger artifacts.
The bigger artifact strategies. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it works in the affinity lists.
Okay.
Which may be an issue. You do have, I don't know, it's probably a pretty good Time Walk Ancestral Recall deck, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Vintage Fish.
Right, right.
It's just you have to contend with the fact that people play Force and Mental Misstep so often.
Yeah, 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 that's true.
And, you know, if your super powerful effects, like spells of infinity, don't hit, then you don't really... You just have, like, a bunch of weird dudes.
Okay, another Vintage question.
Mm-hmm.
What was the card you were most surprised to see in Summon 75?
Ooh.
If you recall.
I was surprised to hear that Darksteel Juggernaut was a card...
Darksteel Juggernaut.
It's 5 mana, indestructible, has power toughness equal to the number of artifacts you control, and it has to attack each turn.
Is it from Skarsmeriden?
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's
a Vintage card.
Is that like
I didn't see it.
Standard for a lot of Workshop decks, or is that a little bit off the beaten path?
Like I said, I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
That's
a good one. I would not have expected Darksteel Juggernaut either.
I mean, I would say that it's not necessarily a card, but I was super surprised how important attacking, like something as simple as attacking for 2, how effective that is. Like, how often, I kind of view it as a tent. Vintage, it felt like to me as like a tent. Whereas the things that you see are these huge effects.
Mm-hmm.
They're the blah, 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 I'm going to do this thing. Those create the tent poles and the tent.
Yeah.
But within the tent, there are just these little people just, like, playing out a strategy. Whereas, like, they're just inching out little advantages here and there. Like, especially when the Workshop decks battle, it's just, like, Mishra's Factory is a huge card. And it's much more like what you would... A man land is... A 2/2 creature is important in Vintage?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mishra's Factory. Been doing it up since the old days.
So, that actually to me was the most surprising thing about Vintage is that it's pretty, it's powered, and it can definitely be like a turn one. It can definitely be like a turn one. I mean, we saw it. The finals came down to Delver versus Oath. Delver player... goes land, Ancestral Recall. They battle over 2 Mental Missteps, and then eventually the Oath player misdirects the Ancestral Recall to himself.
That's freaking awesome.
And then on his turn one, he goes Forbidden Orchard, Lotus, Oath of Druids, give you a dude, Time Walk. Which,
so like, insane.
That's Vintage for you.
Yeah, that's
But
that's
you
awesome.
Also have games where they seem incredibly... Like, we watched a Blue-Red Delver deck that just, like, crawled its way back from being, like, completely overwhelmed by this Workshop stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it's really, like, a much more... It's a format that is much more complex than people give it credit for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I found interesting... So, like you mentioned, kind of the tent, right? Sort of being determined by, you know, whatever the most broken things you can do are. But in the midst of I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because you have those broken decks kind of keeping everything in check. Like, you can't try just anything because it has to be something that can compete with these broken decks. But within that, the ways that you get those little advantages or the tools that you can find just kind of throughout all of Magic's history that fill these little niches. What I'm thinking of in particular, I remember Bob Marr talking about this, is that the Burning Oath deck had M15 card...
Void Snare.
Void Snare in the sideboard.
Yes.
Because it could bounce any non-land permanent for only a single blue mana and is a sorcery, so you could get it with Burning Wish.
Yes.
And surprisingly, so far in Magic's history, no other card had filled that hole yet. So it was like, finally, oh, here's this little niche that existed that no one really knew this space was here, or like few of us did. Maybe I'm sure the vintage players or whatever. But, oh, here you go. Like, fits it perfectly.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
I mean, I was always, I'm always surprised by the, like Stormscape Apprentice being a vintage, or no, Shadow Guild Mage being a vintage card. Waterfront Bouncer is played in vintage.
Right, right.
And it's partially because it's a merfolk, but partially because it can answer the, like, it can bounce, like, play Oath, bounce it back to your hand.
Right.
I also, I think that the fireworks is what you see, but the battle really goes on underneath. So, and as well, like, when you look at Fish, like, merfolk into Lord is still really good in vintage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Especially when you back it up with permission and...
You just have the like Force of Will and the Null Rod to... You
know, yeah, absolutely.
To keep the coast clear.
Legacy, I think the most surprising thing I saw was Scapeshift. Yep, there was a Jund Scapeshift deck.
I could 5-0. See that. I could see that.
When we put it on camera. And
did it stay 5-0?
Yeah, it actually went 6-0.
Or... So. No, I mean, did it just... Did he just like drop from the event and stay 5-0?
leave it on the top, baby. Going out on a high note.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really fun. Treasure Cruise is totally going to get, I think, banned in Legacy and restricted in Vintage. And
so? I can see restricted in Vintage. Banned in Legacy seems a little shotgunny. We'll see, though. We'll see how
finals,
it plays out.
The finals of the Vintage of Legacy, 7 Treasure Cruises.
But
6 Delver decks.
That's probably contoured to some extent by the fact that it's flashy and new and a lot of people want to do it.
No, people were metagaming against it.
Some, like, but there are also those out there who are particularly attracted to the new technology.
And I think that plays a role. Format, and while I think that...
So far, let's see how 3 months go legacy, and then make it, you know.
There's how long has Khan's been out? A month already, right?
Yeah.
So there's been, like, what, at least 3 Legacy Opens so far?
Yeah, something like that.
That's not enough time?
In my opinion, no. Okay. Maybe in some people's.
Okay. I'm interested to see it.
They're also Opens, right? I mean, they're not Pro Tours. They're not... I mean, there is no Legacy Pro Tour. I wish. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, then, you know, there's also something to be said for, like, that slightly more Wild West element to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess we'll see. You know, GP New Jersey is Legacy. So, we'll see.
I've honestly disagreed with a lot of Legacy bannings, though. So, maybe I'm in the minority in that regard.
Perhaps. I mean, definitely in Modern. I mean, if Ancestral Visions is good enough to be banned, but Treasure Cruise is like more...
Ancestral Visions is banned in Modern? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. Then why are we not banning Treasure Cruise?
Then again, not all the cards banned in Modern, at least I remember, this is what I remember reading at the beginning of the format, were not strictly because of power level. They also, I know, intentionally wanted the format to begin in a kind of fresh, new, diverse space. Yeah. So some of the stuff they banned was what they knew, the decks they knew people would default to. You know, which were like the powered up versions of standard decks or whatever.
Yeah, I had read that Ancestral Visions was banned just because they didn't want everyone to play blue.
yeah. So not because
it was like such an insane card, but
one way to get people, you know, stoked on a new format is like just if everything's new, everything's innovative, and all of that. So that's
something that works because not many people play blue. So
last thing we did not point out about GPLA.
Yes, sir.
No blue cards in the top 8.
Oh, Well, we hadn't even talked anything about GPLA. Yeah, yeah, but
just random fact that I standard? Found out today. Yeah, standard. No blue cards.
Yes, yes.
Period.
But
was it all Abzan or something?
It was mostly Abzan, Mardu, Mono Red.
But GP Stockholm, which was standard finals, were both blue decks.
Oh, okay.
Jeskai and Teemer.
So. That's good. Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up. I've still got lots of stuff to do. Required reading. Required media right. consumption.
Yeah.
We'll just do that real quick and then call her a day.
James, you got anything?
I'd like to go last, actually.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll go first, I guess. I'm going to promote manadeprived.com.
It's a good site.
Generally because I don't think enough people know about it. It's Canada's number one Magic site, and they get exclusive spoilers. They have really great content. They have pros that write for them. They also
have... Is that Alexander Haynes' team, or is he face-to-face?
He's team face-to-face, but face-to-face sponsors manadeprived. So it's all like... It's all kind of one thing. But it's I talk to Taco people Bell. All the time who are like... Like, I tell them my podcast is on manadeprived, and they're like, what?
Really? Because see, I had heard of that before, and when I first met you and you told me that your Across the Table cast was on Mana Deprived, I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. But I don't... So that's all. That's all I want.
Well, give us just a little too. Who are some of the... What's a little bit of the content? Or give us a couple of the people that write for it or something like that.
Well, Jay writes really good Cube articles. Mm-hmm. Who also is on there?
Like, I think I originally heard of the site from Flores. I think he had...
He's Top 8 Magic is now on Mana Deprived.
Okay, all right.
Favorite podcast. KYT, the captain, you know, he's Captain Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He just recently qualified for the Pro Tour. He's a really good player in his own right. Who else writes for them? Let's just... Scotty Mac, you know, they're all members of the A-Team, and they're good players in their own right.
So Mr. T writes for them?
Hannibal Face, yeah.
Let me just look up some of these.
I want to hear a quick A-Team story, briefly. So when I was 7 years old, I broke my leg, my femur, actually, the biggest bone.
I heard that's the most painful thing that a human being can experience, is the femur break.
I was only seven, so I don't really have a clear memory of the sensation. I do know that it was torturous. But I was in the hospital... I was in traction and all that. And I remember I had this other little kid roommate, you know, he's five or six or something, close to my age. And there was, we would have like kind of little mini spats about, I wanted to watch the A-Team, but apparently it ran at the same time as the Smurfs. My kid I was sharing a room with wanted to watch the Smurfs. I wanted to watch the A-Team. This was a source of, you know, of conflict.
God. Okay. Simpler times.
Meta deprived.
Yes, check out manadeprived.com. What I have in mind is Mark Rosewater's Drive to Work podcast, number 162. It's entitled Enchantment World. So in this podcast, he answers the question that people are always asking for Enchantment World, not in the sense that we had in Theros, but like, when are we going to get a block that is to enchantments what Mirrodin block was to artifacts? And he explains... the design and like mechanical difficulties inherent to Magic that make it not necessarily impossible, but a very difficult thing to provide, if not impossible. So I think these kind of podcasts from Rosewater, I don't know, they just get that theoretical side of your brain really, really lit up, and I really enjoy them.
Okay, James,
you're on the block. I've been really busy, so I haven't been able to read stuff. So I've got a little something else for you this week. So I don't know if you ever heard of the game Back Alley Brawl, but it's I know about it because of the show Walking the Plains. Basically, Back Alley Brawl is where you take two cards and you ignore the text on the cards. You just look at the pictures and you argue over which one would win if they met in a back alley and had to fight.
That's kind of interesting. So, not too dissimilar from Kangaroo Court that we talked about.
But so, in the episode, they do Emrakul versus Grizzlebrand and Mother Runes versus Blurred Mongoose.
I remember that. Yeah.
So, I think this is a fun way to get the community more involved. So, for this week, the back alley brawl is giant trapdoor spider versus Fungusaur. The original art of Fungusaur. That's important because the 8th edition one, he looks kind of silly. I love him. I have a foil version of the 8th edition, but he is silly. The original one is a little bit horrifying. So I think he'd put up a better fight.
Okay.
So I want you guys to comment on either whatever episode you find on any of our pages, and I will comment on all of them to ensure that you know my opinion. And I will hope that this will become a conversation, because I've been actually playing this game with my coworkers at work, not with magic cards, but with just like different entities, such as Jaws versus the Anaconda from Anaconda.
Yeah, the classic who would win in a fight between...
Yeah, one of my coworkers, whether he would win in a fight between him and a reasonably sized squid.
Okay.
Can I... A velociraptor versus a chimpanzee. These are the important questions.
Can I tell you the one that caused a long discussion between my friend John Davey and I several years ago? It was who would win between an iron golem and the Branch Davidians.
Branch Davidians?
What is that? You don't remember? Well, maybe this is a little before James' time. In the early 90s, when that dude David Koresh started, he led a cult in Waco, Texas.
Yes.
And the FBI like raided the cult and they ended up killing a bunch of people. And it was like a big fiasco. Those are the Branch Davidians.
Okay.
So the Branch Davidians versus an iron golem.
How many were there?
Oh, 50-ish, maybe, something like that. Or maybe, I don't remember. It may have been,
golem, dude.
It may have been in the three digits.
These are unarmed Branch Davidians? They just have fists and a love of whatever deity was?
I think they had some armaments.
Broken bottles?
You can look up the info about the Branch Davidians. I'm sure you can Wikipedia that business.
Okay. All right. That's all right. Yeah, definitely. Comment. Let us know what your opinion is. It's very important. I also want to say one last thing before we wrap up. Whoever is spoiling stuff that they should not be spoiling, like most of the Black Commander deck, like the new one, was spoiled early.
Really?
By somebody. Stop it. Seriously, that's not cool. It ruins people. Like Mana Deprived, for example, had a spoiler. Their spoiler was ruined by this leak.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. And all you're doing, you're just... It's just a dick move.
And you can't ever... Well, I can't say that. I was going to say you can't be in the Hall of Fame, but we all know how that turned out.
Yeah. Do we?
Guillaume Waffles Tapa.
Oh. Yeah.
Give me waffle tacos.
Well, he was... We'll not get into that.
That's old news. So,
who would win in a fight between Fungusaur and Guillaume Waffle Tapa?
He's such a skinny man. Are you kidding me? He would have no chance.
We all know that. That's why I picked Giant Trapdoor Spider. That's a much more reasonable fight.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well,
give us our fortune for the week, man.
We got to close with that. Oh. I'm Matt Mendoza. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Mendoza.
James? I'm James Mellish. You can find me on Twitter at Melishkimo, MTG, MELLISH. KIMONTG.
And I'm going to make you spell that Twitter until you're just done spelling it so that you can just change your Twitter to something else.
Okay. I haven't been posting much recently, but I'll get back in the habit starting tomorrow.
Yeah, we need your thoughts. The world needs your insight.
I know.
You can find me on Twitter at Dustin Seth. And if you'd like to help me out this week, I entered some like singer-songwriter competition for Guitar Center or whatever. We can find the link and put it in the show notes, but it's like Guitar Center sessions. I threw some videos up of tunes, and you can like, just watching them helps, you know, but if you share it on social media, whatever, that'd be super cool. You don't have to, but if you want to, that'd be rad.
Yeah, it's great music that, you know, you put on, you can, wherever you are, you can just throw on your headphones and feel like you're in a coffee shop.
I love
just,
it.
You could have probably, some dude in the background playing some music.
I would love to be your dude in the background.
You could probably sing it to your crush, and she will almost certainly fall.
Or he. We're not trying to force roles on anyone.
When I play it, and Dustin is in the room, knowing that he sang that song, I start giving him, you know, the eyes, the bedroom eyes.
I've seen the eyes. This has happened.
So, and you can find Five Color Media on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Twitch and YouTube. You know, whatever.
All the stuff.
As well, if you have any long form feedback, please send it to us at fivecolormedia@gmail.com. You can now find our cast on MTGcast, which is pretty cool.
Oh, right.
As well as Podbay, Stitcher, and iTunes, and
just make some up. I don't know. Yeah. It's on MTVU.
If you surf the web, you can find it.
Yes. VH1 Classic.
I'd like to thank everybody who tuned in to the stream this weekend for the Internal Champs. We hit 3,500 viewers and around 23,000 to 24,000 uniques, which is really cool.
Fantastic.
Especially for the second time streaming on that account. We're now up to like 12, I think they're not up to like 1,200 or 1,300 followers, which is really cool. So, and yeah, I loved it. It was rough at times, but it was definitely a learning experience and something I took a lot away from. So I just appreciate everybody tuning in and making it a success.
Well, I remember feeling a little bit of defensiveness towards you when I was watching the stream at one point on Saturday, and some like there was a deck tech video that kind of kept like replaying a couple times, the same one. And people were kind of, you know, yakety-yakking in the stream. And I felt a little like, you leave him alone. He is there working hard. And I know it. Trying to fix this. Yeah. So you guys just button your yaps.
Oh, there was definitely a lot of things that were not optimal. And, you know, GG's Live is, you know, like the people that do this, the people that do Grand Prix now and Star Cities, like Star Cities streams, for example, everybody like, likes to throw around comparisons and stuff, and it's like, dude, Star City has like $100,000 worth of equipment. They have years of experience. They grind out, you know, like their crew is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because they've had so many reps.
Practice makes better.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and this is like the second large event I've ever streamed. So I'm going to be pursuing more opportunities locally to stream PTQs and stuff. So, but you know, it's difficult. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that.
And no reason to make excuses. It was great.
I'm not going to get everything right the first time. And, you know, there's a lot of little things that you miss. So when you're doing this type of work, it's really interesting and like just trying to figure everything out. So.
And that's not to give the impression that there was some cascade of problems. I mean, a hiccup or two, but the stream went excellently.
Thank you.
Every point I was watching.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening, and tune in next week. All right.
La Fortuna.
Here's La Fortuna. You will find your solution where you least expect it.
Ooh, provocative.
Bye. Things could turn bitter when you don't use discipline. You might wake up the next day upset and in fear, bugging out, yapping about how the fuck did I get here? Who the hell is this stranger staring all in my face? Now you're wishing you had positioned yourself in that place. Think just in case you should have took more precautions.